Hi.
It's just I mentioned that there's been a lot in the recent news, I mean over the last few years, about agent provocateurs entering all these campaigns, getting into relationships with members, pretending to marry them, etc. And I think there's a report out on it. So it's not just historic, it's actually still going on.
Oh, yeah,
And
absolutely.
it's an entryism that they never really talk about. Although the police are increasingly getting caught out because of the fact that they are entering into personal relationships with other members of the groups, etc., to maintain their undercover cover. So it's just a point is that it's not historic, it's not only intellectuals, and as you say, the targets have seemed to have changed. No longer is it obviously political groups, but more the animal activists, I think, was the first ones that I heard about, Animal Liberation Front. Now it's the eco activists, environmentalists that are being targeted as a threat to national security. So that's really what I just wanted to say was it's still going on, and it's still getting uncovered. The undercover is getting uncovered.
Indeed, yeah. I think, well, I mean, the book obviously mainly talks about this in historical terms, 20th century, but definitely, I think it did make the point, still going on, even if the targets may be rather different these days. I think I mentioned that they're probably looking at militant Islam and yes, I mean, that notorious case, I think, was an animal rights group who somebody infiltrated and a member of which he married and even had children with, if I'm not mistaken, without her knowing what was going on. And I'm sure there's a lot going on at the moment with Russia as well, non-Soviet Russia, obviously. A lot of sort of spying and counter espionage activities as well. I wonder if anybody else has sort of had the same kind of experience as I talked about earlier in the talk of having sort of, reasonably well-founded suspicions that there was somebody in the party or coming to meetings who was there, for a different reason than most people were there for. Paddy. Say you first, Paddy. I think it's you, isn't it? No.
Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know if I've told you this this story before, but I was told this story about years ago by Peter Lawrence, and he said that I don't know, they were organising some kind of presence at a rally or a stall or maybe something like that, fairly innocuous. I mean, being the Socialist Party, it wasn't going to be anything kind of major, but he was surprised to get a knock on his door from a policeman from the local constabulary who just turned up out of politeness to say, "Oh, it's fine. I've just been told to come tell you that it's fine to organise your SPGB activity on the day. We've been told by a special branch that you're cleared." Well, he told me this story. I mean, Yeah, I think I don't think there's any question, is there, that I mean they would have looked into us, they look into everybody, and from the sound of it, from what your author is saying, the secret plod are no not the brightest.
They got it right in this case,
They're
then.
not like the TV spooks, are they? Like totally on the ball with with the ticking clock and everything. They sound pretty clueless. And I've always suspected that. I remember years ago, I read a. There was a. I don't know if anybody's read the spy stories of Len Dayton. I always quite liked him because he was quite down to earth. And he makes the point in one novel that You know, spies are great. Actually, spies are really good. Spies keep the peace because they mean, because of spies, every country knows exactly what every other country is up to. So none of them can surprise each other, which is what tends to keep the peace and prevent the wars. So, you know, instead of hunting out the spies, they should be encouraging them, sort of thing. I thought that was quite an amusing sort of view. But I've always suspected that there's an awful lot of incompetence in these things. And, of course, being secretive, they cover it all up. And also that they sort of depend for their budgets, don't they, on, you know, the sort of perpetually upping the ante and, you know, telling the Home Office, oh, yeah, no, there's a big problem with this. Oh, yeah, we need more budget. Yeah, we need more people, sort of thing. It's a big problem. So it's a kind of self-perpetuating government industry, I suppose. I wondered about it. Oh, and by the way, this is of course why we have the sort of politics that we do, isn't it? Because I mean, I'm sure we all know sort of I know a left communist who's, well, he, by his own admission, you know, he's paranoid about the state. He doesn't want anybody to know where he lives or anything like this. And you know, it just sounds like a miserable way to be. And you know, our politics is about, you know, the idea is, well, you know, the more that you try to evade the eye of the state, the more you try to act in secret, you know, the more that you'll simply attract their interest. And so, you know, this is why we do what we do. We just like, well, if you just try and organise revolution above board, on the level, through democratic means, through the ballot box, you know, everything out in the open, you know, there's nothing that they can do about that. It's, I mean, at least in a democratic, reasonably democratic country like Britain, it's a bit of a different story in places like Iran and, you know, even worse, you know, North Korea and so on, or even, you know, Russia or Ukraine. But at least as far as here is concerned, that just seems the most sensible way to operate. In other countries where you don't get those political freedoms, you know, we might have to operate in some other way. Just one last thing I wondered about was, I wonder if it would be worth us making a Freedom of Information request to find out if at any point, you know, because we've got 120-year history and the statute of limitations applies, doesn't it, for a lot of things, 50 years or something. I wonder if we could find out through an FOI request, you know, if we've been investigated in the past or infiltrated. And then I wonder, well, maybe we shouldn't, because it might depress us too much to find out that we weren't being investigated and we weren't considered a threat.
Yeah, I'm sure that what you mentioned earlier about the need for them to come up with something is a factor in them sort of coming up with a load of stuff that's of no relevance, because, you know, it keeps them in business, so to speak. I'm sure that's right, yeah. As for freedom of information requests, well, I mean, are they covered by FOIs? I don't know. It's something we can inquire about anyway. Suspect they're probably not, but all right. John next.
Yes, I think it must undoubtedly be the case that the state will have looked into us, because they have to, as somebody already said, they have to look into everything. They have to check everything. And although even the meanest intelligence, and that is what we're dealing with a lot of the time, even although the meanest intelligence should realise after a fairly cursory examination of us and our activities that we are not a threat in a conventional sense. We're the biggest threat to capitalist society if people took us seriously, but we're not any threat to the small matter of the British state. We're against all states, so, you know, it doesn't matter so much from that point of view. But I suspect that that we have been well investigated and are probably still looked into from time to time, because to their paranoid minds, how are they to know that our hitherto peaceful way of doing things is not going to suddenly change and that we'll start becoming more violent, the more violent sort of dissident? They don't know that, because the police mentality all over the world is very similar. And although they perhaps don't adhere to some of the more outrageous prejudices that we heard of earlier, although I think some still do. They're still full of the more current prejudices of today. So, yeah, these people will always be looking into any form of dissidence, and that's why even people that most people consider relatively harmless, animal rights kind of people that don't do much in the way of, you know, violent activity or anything, you know, destructive of property and whatnot, a lot of people think that's shocking that MI5 should be looking into them. But they just have to look at any form of dissidence. They have to. Governments are just really worried about this sort of thing. Any kind of government anywhere in the world. Some obviously more than others. So I think that's the situation. I've got no direct experience. I've only got a few little suspicions from time to time. I've had posts, particularly posts that's emanated from the party that's been interfered with. And I don't know whether that's just sort of the sort of growing carelessness of the post office or what it is. It might be that some agents of the state might find it amusing to let you know that they've tampered with your post. But I don't think their masters would be too keen on that. I think they would rather be secretive than leave it that you don't know. But a couple of older party members who are sadly not with us have told us stories of meeting people, strange people that turned up at branch meetings. Now, you could say nearly everybody that turns up at our meetings are rather strange in some respect, but these were rather strange visitations that in hindsight, people thought that was a bit strange. That was a bit odd, the way the person sort of almost interrogated them. So you could say there was a whiff of the police or the state about them. But, you know, we don't know, but we must have been looked into. There's no question about that. They would be derelict in their duty if they didn't look into everybody that might possibly just have a difference of opinion and therefore merits being looked into from their point of view, I think.
Yeah, it's certainly true that over the years, all kinds of weirdos have come to our meetings and, you know, may have raised suspicions about who they were and where they came from. But yeah, we don't really know. I mean, to some extent, maybe it's just paranoia on our part, but maybe in some cases it hasn't been. Especially if they just come once and ask all sorts of questions. I mean, you talked about the way in which they'd be more interested in sort of potentially violent subversion. Subversion, John. Absolutely true. And I think that's. I mean, if the character who the sort of so-called insurance agent who knocked on my door a long, long time ago. Was in fact some kind of spy, if you like. Then you know that it's sort of that's a sort of bit of a confirmation of that, in the sense that he was particularly interested in what was going on in Ireland. And if you think about where Swansea is geographically, it was a well-known sort of stopping-off point for, you know, IRA people who maybe would come to Britain with a view to, you know, spreading the armed struggle to England. Sorry, come to England, Wales, etc. And therefore, you know, one might think that they were looking in that area for people who might be supportive of them in one way or the other, might shelter them or whatever. But well, I certainly put him off that anyway, whether he was convinced or not, impossible to know. Okay, right. I'm not sure who EPJZ Jeff is, but it's you next.
Okay, it's Tony here.
Sorry?
It's Tony.
Oh, hello, Tony. Sorry, you're not immediately identifiable, but yeah. Hiya, Tony.
No, carry on. Probably get used to it after a bit.
Okay, right.
I'll put a link up about recent stuff. One thing that seemed to be missed off was the amount of undercover stuff that has gone into the trade union movement. I mean, there's a legendary picture of two cops dragging some miner covered with blood away with the caption, which one's a policeman? And of course, it was the undercover cop who was in the middle being dragged away. And I mean, there's the whole thing with the electrician blacklist and the cooperation between the police and what used to be called consultant something or other, some sort of business organisation that was basically targeting trade union militants. So that went with the electrician strike only a couple of years ago, that has still dragged on. And of course, there's all the missing inquiry or whatever they call it these days, where your man there was talking about undercover cops sleeping with activists and all that sort of stuff, which was not MI5. It's a special demonstration.
We're losing you a bit, Tony, I'm afraid. Is something to do with your position next to the microphone?
Tony, oh, okay. I'm right in front of it.
Right, can hear you now. You've come back now. Okay.
Okay. That was kind of it, really. I don't know which bit you missed.
Not much.
That'll do me.
Okay, thanks very much indeed, Tony. Yeah. By the way, the link Tony's put up is on the chat. If you click on the chat at the bottom, you'll find it. It'll come up on the right hand side, and there's a link about this special demonstration squad, including around the public inquiry into undercover policing. Yeah. Okay. Paul, you next. Paul Bennett.
Yeah, hello, Harold. Hello, everyone.
Paul, it was the other Paul first. Sorry.
Sorry, Paul.
You're next. Okay. Can you mute, Paul? Can you unmute? Sorry, there we are. You've done it.
I was. No, I'm okay. I'm going to tell a story. This is at second hand, so I can't vouch for the truth of it myself. A member told me some years ago that before he joined the party, he was a member of some anarchist organisation. And at his local branch, there was one person who attended the branch regularly, but it was fairly clear that he wasn't really an anarchist, because apart from what he said about anarchism, all his other views were very reactionary and bigoted and so on. And of course, the other members realised this pretty quickly. So what they did, they simply used him as a means of transport, you know, gave them lifts to demonstrations and meetings and so on, and made use of him that way. But it was clear that he wasn't an anarchist and that he really hadn't done any real preparation for pretending to be one of them. As I say, that's something that somebody else told me, and I can't vouch for it myself, but it strikes me as entirely plausible that someone like that would be tasked with infiltrating, or whatever word you want to use, some sort of local anarchist organisation, and not get anywhere in the end.
And this was presumably in the days before that many people had cars. So,
certainly before many anarchists had cars, yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. Right, okay. Paul, over to you now. Paul Edwards.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks, Howard. So I'm going to run something by you, Howard, that you might be able to no doubt you'll remember this. I've never had any sort of experience that I can actually come out and say, oh, yeah, there was definitely something suspicious about this. But thinking back, take your mind back to last year at the COP26 in Glasgow, Howard. And you remember on the Tuesday, I turned up with this kind of complete random whom I passed over to you. Let me take you a little bit further back to the point where I first became aware of this particular chap. I'd left the house in Kilmarnock that morning, heading on up to Glasgow for COP26, stood at the bus stop, and I just became aware of my car pulling over, someone getting out and sort of standing at the back of me. And, you know, it's not uncommon for people to do park and ride, whether it's undergrounds, bus stops, train stations. And I never really gave it a second thought until I started to sort of reflect on things. I got on the bus, and of course I'd Fred my guide dog with me and go through all the motions as you do, sat down. And this same chap stood at the back of me, came, sort of sat directly in front of me on the bus. Journey comes to an end. I got off when I got off. He got off first, I got off next. And he just kind of stood there hovering around. And again, never thought of it until he just sort of brass-necked it, come up to me and sort of just, you're with the Extinction Rebellion. And I says, no, not me. He says, what brings you up to Glasgow? And I said, sorry, who am I speaking to, kind of thing? Oh, he says, I'm just here. I'm just, I've come up from, I think he said Cornwall or Devon or somewhere like that. He says, I'm just here for a few days and I'm just having a look around. I'm hoping to meet up with some people from Extinction Rebellion. And I said, well, no, I says, yeah, I have not. I says, if you've got your head, sort of head on up along to the main SEC where the main event's taking place, then you'll probably find them there. And said, well, what about yourself? What brings you up? And I said, well, I'm going to meet some friends too, members of the Socialist Party of Great Britain. No, he said, do you mind if I come along with you? And of course, we're toddling along and he's firing all these questions at me and I'm sort of answering to the best of my ability, not being a particularly suspicious person. I'm just going along with it. And then, of course, we turned up at Royal Exchange Square. You're bound to remember this.
Yeah.
And I said, look, here, let me pass you on to my friend and comrade here, Howard. He says, you'll be able to answer any questions you've got. And there we parted company, at least for that moment. Until the very next day, almost exactly the same thing happened, but unbeknown to me. This same chap, again, for obvious reasons, I don't need to spell out to you, I didn't recognise him. But sure enough, I got off at the other end of the bus and I became aware that he was sort of tagging along with me again. But there was no mention, no nothing kind of thing. And I'm sort of going so far and he's kind of standing and looking. He says, oh, back up again, are we? And it's probably, I've no doubt it's all very innocent and harmless and all the rest of it. But, you know, it's occasions like that you do start to question, you know, what's going on. Obviously, I was quite involved in helping to pull the thing together. There was a lot of emails. And I've always had some suspicions about, you know, my emails being hacked and all those kind of things. But as you rightly say, Howard, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to be afraid of. And, you know, you stay within those reasonable realms of capitalist law, then you've got nothing to be fearful of. But another thing that often crosses my mind, and you talk about how sort of surveillance is so technically ahead of, you know, it's no longer the days of these kind of civil servants sitting behind newspapers with eyes poked out of holes in the paper where they can see what's going on. But you're obviously being listened to a lot of the time now too. Now, again, I don't think this is, well, I'm pretty sure it's not sort of government-run surveillance. Anyone that's got an Alexa or one of these kind of smart speakers in their house, I can tell you without any doubt that you are being listened to, probably for perfectly innocent reasons, including you mentioned marketing earlier on. And the reason I'm saying that is because this sort of started to unfold, you know, over the last few weeks. Melinda, my wife and I, were talking about our latest grandson and trying to get, you know, something suitable for his Christmas, taking into consideration his age. We're having a perfectly random conversation and we happen to mention like Fisher Price, and oh, how, you know, toys have changed over the days and all these all singing, all dances, toys, all dancing toys. So, of course, thought no more of it, but went back onto Amazon, it might have been YouTube, and of course up pops all these adverts for Fisher Price toys. So that by and of itself is, oh, women coincidence that. But then another strange thing happened just a few days ago. I've just recently been diagnosed with diabetes, stage 2 diabetes, weight related. I need to lose some weight and stuff. And of course, I comes back up the road and goes, well, how did you go? And says, oh, that's actually moved. It's gone from pre-diabetes and it's gone into sort of type 2 diabetes using blah, blah, blah. And so a conversation was had. Then I go onto YouTube for no other reason. I basically click on YouTube, and then up comes all these things about all about diabetes or something, and what to do, and best exercises, and weight loss, and the impact and the side effects. That's before I even typed in a search, you know. So these are just some of the things that, again, they're probably not particularly sinister, certainly nothing to go over concerned or anxious or paranoid about. But it just goes to show that technology and the likes of what it is, you know, that there's nowhere safe now. You can't even have a private conversation without your smart speakers being just a wee bit too smart for my liking, you know. But that's just a typical example of what we're up against. But yeah, that was the first thing I wanted to mention to you, Howard, and maybe bounce off to you. Did you find anything particularly unusual or suspicious about this chap, or did you think I'm just being a bit sort of over-anxious or over-cautious? I don't know. What did you think?
I do remember it. I do remember you passing him on to me and saying, this comrade will sort of, you know, clue you into what we stand for and why we're here, etc. And I do remember having a conversation with him. Unfortunately, I can't remember. I had a lot of conversations that weekend. I can't remember the details and whether I thought there was maybe anything suspicious about him. So, can't help very much, unfortunately, there, but you may well be right. You may be, you met him on the bus and it's a bit unusual and, he was keen to know stuff. Don't really know, I'm afraid. Don't really
I know. Yeah. No, I just thought, now that we're having the conversation, I thought it might be worth bouncing off you because I meant to ask you about it before.
Yeah.
But
no, I do remember it. Yeah.
Okay. It was all very, very coincidental.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that.
All right. Cheers. Thanks very much, Cheers, Paul. Fella. Interesting. Yes. Right, over to you now, Mike.
Thanks. Yeah, it's an interesting talk and a discussion so far. I was trying to have a think if there's been any people who've popped along to meetings who sort of rang alarm bells, and I can't think of anything concrete really. A few people many years ago who turned up. This is including going back to old Colchester branch, who turned up and sort of were very enthusiastic for one or two meetings, asked a lot of questions, then disappeared. But I can't remember, sort of anything particular they said that sort of didn't ring alarm bells. So I suppose there's lots of people who sort of get interested in something, but then sort of burn out, unfortunately, way too quickly that there's nothing suspicious about. So yeah, I don't have any anecdotes, unfortunately. But the point I was going to make is sort of similar to the one Paul just did, really, in that these days, as well as sort of more sort of personal infiltration that goes on, surely a lot of the searches they can do are online. You know, the Secret Services could easily sort of look into websites or, in our case, Vintcom or SP Open and do a bit of delving there, or even do sort of searches for certain keywords and see if or sort of sentences that the Secret Services might be wary about. Again, I'm sure it's related more to terrorism than to politics. But yeah, I would have thought a lot of their searches could be done online now rather than in person, going along to meetings and demos and things. Well, I'm sure both happen. But yeah, I wonder how much is done sort of behind a keyboard now without only resorting to old-fashioned methods. But again, we've got nothing to fear there, considering how open we are. But I suppose other organisations might feel a bit more victimised. Yeah, cheers.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I mean, it's true that over the years, quite a lot of people have come into the party, seemed enthusiastic, and then sort of disappeared. They've not been around long. And sometimes, we wondered why. I mean, people can get fed up quite quickly if they don't see sort of, fairly quick progress. It's true. I must say I sort of had, I'm sure, completely unfounded suspicions about the one person who joined the party from coming onto Discord a year or two ago. He joined, I've forgotten his name offhand now, but somebody may remember it. He joined and was very interested, even submitted a couple of articles to the Standard, and then for completely spurious reasons, decided that he wrote to say he was leaving for, as I say, for completely spurious reasons. And I didn't quite know what was going on there. He did also say that he'd been, before that, he'd been involved in other sort of left-wing organisations. He hadn't liked them, and therefore, you know, he was trying us, and he thought that, you know, we perhaps had something more to offer. I think he said he'd been in the Labour Party at some point as well. So he did cross my mind, but probably not, you know, because, as I say, we've had sort of, you know, other such people enter the party before and not stay around for very long. I mean, it's much more common for people to come into the party and sort of stay in and, you know, not do any activity and, you know, just sort of sink into apathy. That's a lot more common, and some sort of gradually sort of disappear as well. There's different sort of trajectories, aren't they? Okay, anyway, Joel, you next. You're muted. Ah, there we are.
Joel. Yeah. Because we're an open party and there are no secret meetings, these possible, I don't know what you call them, infiltrators, I suppose we wouldn't call them infiltrators, but anyhow, MI5, whatever they want to call themselves, because we're so open, they must come away shaking their head and frustrated, thinking they don't hide a thing. Everything they say is like, to the nth degree, is like open. They must go away sort of really puzzled and thinking, but could there be a secret meeting that I don't know about? I mean, it's in a way, as a touch of farce about it, because we're so open, and the fact that anyone wanted to find any secrets wouldn't find any secrets because we don't have any to sort of keep. But yeah, that's just it. But I've enjoyed the talk. It's a good subject.
Thanks, Joel. Thanks very much. Okay, John, you again.
Yes, it's just further to something Paul said about Alexa spying. I suppose everyone's aware of the fact that when you go about your business on the internet, you're being tracked all the time. And it's not so much that it's necessarily spying on individual people as just the attributes it detects from whichever entity is operating the computer system. And so it adds up all those things and it comes to certain conclusions. And in the main, it's all what a lot of people might consider relatively harmful. Harmless. They say harmless, I say it could be harmful. People always trying to pester you with stuff they want to sell you. I consider that quite harmful, actually. But anyway, you know, so the main motivation is to know more about what people are likely to do next so that then they can use that to sell them the right thing at the right time. Yeah. And we've had cases of, you know, quite high-profile cases or suddenly come to everyone's attention that some guy was outraged that his daughter was sent information for pregnant women, and here she was, a young schoolgirl, or not much more than a schoolgirl. And it turned out that, to cut a long story short, he was wrong being outraged, because in fact she actually was pregnant, and the kind of things she was buying were a sure indication to this. And it's a bit like the TV people when they say people who watch this also watch that and stuff like that. And it's the same kind of logic that's being used on the internet to sell people stuff. Mm-hmm. And so the guy had to apologize to the companies that were sending her this information, because in actual fact, their conclusions were correct. So that's an example of how apparently unerrant these algorithms can be. People are actually much more predictable than they realise. Now, I'm not actually paranoid, but I just get irritated by the fact that I'm being tracked, and I do what I can to limit it. But there's certain things I won't answer, things that people might think are relatively harmless, like there's a nice, lovely picture put up on my screen, and it asks, do I like it? And I'm thinking, what fucking business is it of yours? I haven't come on to look at pictures, so I don't answer that. And there's a lot of things that I'm momentarily attracted to, and I just think, no, I'm not going to go on that. Some of them I have gone on in the past and discovered it leads you down a hole. You might say a rabbit hole, as they say nowadays. It leads you to a whole load of irrelevancies or things that are irrelevant to what I came on to do. So, yeah, I think if you go about just thinking the world's a harmless place, you can easily get caught up in a whole load of nastiness, a lot of which emanates from being tracked as you use the internet. So I just thought I would mention that. It was just the fact that Paul had mentioned Alexa made me think. And by the way, Alexa, yes, Alexa does listen to you even when it's meant to be deactivated, because I can't remember the reasoning that was given as to why that is. But, you know, should we be that surprised that people with the ability to do these things wouldn't do it if they could? I mean, it just flies in the face of all our experience of the world in which we live. So that's all.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Obviously, the urge to sell is paramount in all this stuff that goes on in the internet, isn't it? So, you know, they sort of grab hold of any chance they can to try and advertise something that you show any kind of interest in. Yeah, happens all the time. Absolutely. I think it's happened to all of us on many occasions. Adam, you now.
Yeah, on the question that was raised earlier about the Freedom of Information Act, a few years ago, a liberal Democrat MP went to some tribunal and he got the right to see the files on him. I mean, I wrote to the MP and said, you know, how have you got access to this? I mean, how can I get access to see any files on me? And he said he hadn't actually got he'd won the court case, but he hadn't actually got access to his file. I mean, maybe I should dig that out again and pursue it, because Steve Coleman once told me that if you speak at Hyde Park, I mean, I spoke at Hyde Park quite a bit in the 60s and 70s. Coleman said one time there was a group of disruptors, and the Hyde Park police were also in favour of dealing with them. So Coleman got to know the chief of police there, or some high ranking policeman there. And he said he went into the police station one day and down into a room, and on the wall were pictures of all the speakers in Hyde Park. So you know, that would have been my photo would have been there. So if I got the Freedom of Information Act, I would have said, I want to see the file on me. But I'm afraid my only personal experience of the Secret Service isn't to do with being a socialist, but rather to do with being a communist, or alleged to being a communist. You know, when I was in university, I joined the university communist club. And then when I wanted to go to America and to get a visa, they delayed it until after the flight was due to go, so I wouldn't be able to go. But all I did, in fact, was change the thing and fly to Canada and just cross the frontier by train. But that wasn't to do with being a member of the SPGB. It was having joined the communist club at university, just to go to their meetings. People have mentioned that there'd be no point in the MI5 or the secret police infiltrating us, but Jack Bradley was a bit of a conspiracy theorist himself. His argument was that they could send somebody into us just to see if you could infiltrate an organization, because if you infiltrate us, it's not just signing a piece of paper and getting involved in activity. You have to convince a branch, or the Membership Applications Committee these days, that the party case. And if you start you know, in conversation saying our country and things like that, people will think, how did he get in? So it'd be quite difficult. It's quite difficult for somebody, in fact, to infiltrate our party. And Jack Bradley's theory was that, you know, the police would send people in into an organisation like us just to see if they could infiltrate an organisation, which would be difficult to fool the to fool the members. The other thing is that we publish all our minutes on Spincom. I mean, in our branch in Westland, we always refuse to do this, because if you do that, you know, you're making available the names of all the members, not only to the, you know, the secret police, but to anybody who wants to track them down for, you know, for debts or alimony and so on. I don't understand, you know, why we still do this, because you have anybody can work out the whole membership list of the well, not the whole membership list, but a large proportion of you know, members of the party. I mean, we are an open organisation, but the only thing which we don't make available public is, in fact, the membership list. And one, you know, final point: when we were talking earlier about infiltrating animal liberation and things like that, I'm sure that Just Stop Oil and Extinction Rebellion are stuffed full of police informers. But they're also been investigating, of course, these days, and probably did a bit in the past, right-wing fascists and terrorists. What they seem to be wanting to track down are people that break the law, or, who are going to, not just disrupt the M25, but, place bombs and kill people. And that's, that's just a point I wanted to make on that. As I say, I haven't got any personal experience of the MI5, except being mistaken for being a communist. Though, in fact, before I joined the party, I was a teenage Russia lover and used to read Soviet Weekly and Soviet News. So maybe that will be on my file as well. I don't know.
Thanks, Adam. Okay, yeah. I mean, with regard to freedom of information requests, and I can't see how they would release MI5 files under freedom of information legislation if, you know, they only release them when they want to. I mean, as it is now, they do not release any files of people who are still alive. They even sort of, you know, fail to release some files of people who are deceased. So I can't see how freedom of information requests would be applicable to that. I'm sure they would refuse. They would say that it's not covered by the legislation. But perhaps it's something someone can look into. Okay, it's Paddy next.
Can I just come back on that point?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I say Freedom of Information Act, but it might have been under some human rights legislation. So I'll have to look up, you know, my correspondence with this Liberal MP, if I can remember his name. I don't suppose he's an MP anymore. But it wasn't necessarily Freedom of Information. It was some court ruling that he was entitled to see what the government had on him.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Right, Paddy, your turn.
I just wanted to. Just come back on that thing that Adam said about how, this theory that we would make good practice for the secret services, that they could, you know, try infiltrating us because it would be hard to get in. But I can remember when I first joined the party, and I think there was a member of a Bolton branch. I mean, Paul might be able to, might know a bit more about this than me, but I think he's a member of Bolton branch, and he was a bit of a strange individual. Like, I think it's been mentioned already that we've had the odd strange individual in the party, and this guy just didn't seem to know the party case at all. In fact, he at one stage he asked, "Would there be a queen in socialism?" And then he sort of hastily added, by way of a qualifier, "Only as a figurehead, you understand, not with any real power." So this was a bit of a local scandal, how he got into Bolton branch. But he certainly wasn't trying to infiltrate the thing, because I think he subsequently ran off with the branch funds. So we don't think he was an agent of the state. There have been people I've sort of come across people who've joined the party who really, their understanding was, you know, not great, to be honest, and they probably got let in because they were a bit lonely and they were mates of mates, somebody's mate of a mate sort of thing. So they kind of got in that way. So I don't know. I know we're supposed to be quite on the ball about, I'm sure we are nowadays, but I can remember a time in the 80s when, you know, certainly some people seemed to manage to get in the party without too much cross-examining. Anyway, just a thought.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of thing does happen. I mean, there was somebody who came to our meeting in Swansea for a long period, for 2 or 3 years, and he'd come to a meeting and put a sort of left-wing case, really, and we put the socialist case to him. And at the end of the meeting, he said, yes, absolutely, I absolutely agree with you. And he'd come to the next meeting and you'd be back to square one. And this went on for a long time, up to the point at which he announced, right, at the next meeting, I'd like to apply to join. And we were a bit desperate because we felt rather sorry for him. We felt he was lonely and so on. And he enjoyed coming to meetings. But, you know, it wasn't going to be very nice saying, no, you can't join. You know, you don't agree with us. Luckily, he never turned up at the next meeting. And then the lockdown came. So we weren't meeting physically. So, you know, we didn't have the difficulty. We didn't have the embarrassment. But, that kind of thing could happen. And I can imagine it being conceivable that, you know, an applicant like that might be let in because to a certain extent people felt sorry for it. But, okay, I don't think it happens very often, by the way, I must say. Right, okay. Now, Adam, you still got your hand up. Is that from last time? Yeah. Okay.
No, it's a mistake. I forgot to lower it. I'll just do it now.
Sorry, you're speaking again, Adam. Yeah. No.
No, I was up by mistake. I wasn't taken down.
Yeah, it's a little legacy. All right, fair enough. Paul, in that case, go on. Over to you, Paul.
Yeah, this is just to answer. pardon me. Sorry, just a minute. Excuse me. I'm sorry about that. I'm halfway through my dinner. No, it was just to answer what Adam was talking about in terms of. Freedom of information. What you'd be looking for, Adam, is what's called an SAR, which is a subject access request. In other words, if you go to any of these organisations that holds data on you, you have a right to request what information they hold about you, and they're obliged, well, legally, they've got to give it to you. And it's called a subject access request, an SAR. So if you wanted to take a note of that and check out the relevant legislation, pardon me, if you do that, then they would have to give you that information because you're the subject and it's your data and you're entitled to be able to see it. So it's an SAR rather than a Freedom of Information request, if that helps. Cheers.
Yeah, I mean, the question of whether that would work is a different matter, however. I've seen subject access requests made in various different organisations. In the universities, for example, it sometimes happens. It's an absolute nightmare for the people involved because every single message that's ever mentioned the person's name has got to be divulged. But it's incredibly easy to get around it. It's incredibly easy not to divulge such messages, and the chances of sort of finding out about them are pretty minimal. I wonder whether it would apply to information held by the Secret Services. I don't know. Somebody would have to give it a try. I sort of doubt it, but okay. Right, okay. Tony, it's you again. Have you unmuted, Tony? You've got your hand up.
Oh, bloody hell, I have now.
Yeah,
you can't ask the cops for your files. What you'll get is almost everything that mentions anybody else will be redacted. Half of it will be bollocks anyway. They'll tell you you were somewhere where you went. And a mate of mine just got one photograph outside an empty building at one point, because that's all that their cover is for anything that mentions anybody else is a breach of data protection rules that they have to apply to other people. So they can only give you information that's very specific about yourself and basically cut everybody else out of the picture. And as I say, half the time it's bollocks anyway. That's it.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for that information. I'm sure you're right about that. Yeah, redaction is something that they go in for a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then you can't really make sense of what they're giving you. Yeah.
Exactly.
Paul, I presume you've got your hand up from before, Paul. Okay. Right, okay. Anybody else like to say anything? Anybody else like to make a comment? Ask a question? We've had quite a good conversation, actually, about this, I think.
Howard?
Yeah? Joy?
You probably don't remember, but when I was living in Edinburgh, we used to phone each other 2-3 times a day, let's say in the evening. Do you not remember you thought we were being listened to? Because the phone kept clicking. We always used to ring at a certain time, and we always used to get this sort of clicking noise on the phone. Do you remember that? No.
Me, 2-3 times a day, never. But anyway.
No,
I know exactly what you're saying. Yes, I do remember the clicking, yeah. And I do remember saying, somebody's probably listening, yeah. I do remember that, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, okay.
Oh, yeah, I do remember it clearly, yes. I mean, you know, it may be, you know, just paranoia. It may have been the nature of the line or something.
I remember at the time that we made a joke and said that we would be really flattered if somebody was listening to us.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, I'm still a bit paranoid now by what I say in phone calls. If I've done anything illegal, I don't do many things illegal, but if I have done anything illegal, I'm be wary about talking about it in a phone call. It's weird. Probably because of that, yeah. It was a long time ago, but probably because of that. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's a good point. Yes. any other comments? We're sort of getting. Paddy. Go on, Paddy.
Just a quick thing. I'm just harking back to your talk. It was a really interesting talk, by the way. I meant to say, loads of stuff in it. Something you said was quite interesting, not a huge surprise either. It was about how the BBC worked hand in glove with the Secret Services, did all their sort of mutual vetting and stuff and stuff like that. Amazing, isn't it, therefore, that Jimmy Savile got away with it for 40 years working with the BBC.
But what did he get away with? He didn't get away with anything political.
Well, yeah, but that's just it. They just obviously didn't care.
I think the implication of what David Catt was saying about the BBC was that they're not doing it now. It doesn't say that specifically, but the impression you get is that this is what the BBC was like, you know, in the 20th century, as it were, but that doesn't necessarily apply to now. Although some people would say it does. I mean, a certain union leader would say that it does, but I don't know. Well, we sort of, it's not quite 9 o'clock yet, but we're sort of getting close to it. And I think we've had a decent discussion. I mean, it's not a discussion that's frankly had a lot to do with socialism. It's, you know, a lot more to do with the way the capitalist system works in a particular area.
John has his hand up.
Oh, sorry, John, I didn't see you. Thanks very much, Paul. Okay, John, carry on.
That's all right. It's nothing much. It was just a question about when Jimmy Savile was mentioned. I was just going to really echo the fact that the state doesn't really care about things like that. And even if it begins to care, you know, it's a bit too late. But a lot of their own agents, people who work for them, a lot of prominent people are said quite often to have a weakness when it comes to what was usually referred to as sexual deviancy, and that covered any form of sexuality that the establishment basically didn't approve of or pretended not to approve of, but some amongst their own number would have these proclivities, and they would say, oh yes, he has a weakness for this, a weakness for young girls or a weakness for young boys, or same as they did with the priests and preachers and scoutmasters and whatnot. People can't say nobody knew about the likes of Jimmy Savile and co, because when I was a child, I can remember a lot of sniggering going on about people shouldn't bend down in front of Father Michael or whoever it was. And I didn't know at the time what they were really referring to, but as you got older, you begin to realise the full horrors of what could have been going on. So these things were well known, but there was an attitude of mind that, well, it's just a weakness somebody had and they were a person of authority, so they were allowed to get away with it. There's plenty of well-known examples. The big monstrous liberal guy, Cyril Smith, he was well known for all sorts of sordid activities, and he got to the grave and escaped it. So there's lots of that goes on, and if it doesn't affect the security of the state, they don't particularly really care about that. It's just it's like the Tory whips. They're privy to all sorts of information about people, which they store away, and every now and again somebody sort of lets the side down and lets some of that information slip. Like recently, an assistant to the chief whip blurted out a whole load of stuff to the BBC about how the chief whip had behaved. And of course, they're all strenuously denying it. But the truth is, they keep stuff on people to blackmail them so that they'll vote for the government. So that sort of corrupt practice is right at the very heart of the state. This should come as no surprise to us, but sadly a lot of our more naive fellow workers are shocked to the core to hear that this sort of thing goes on. But I must admit, from quite a young age, I learned just how rotten these people in authority can actually be. Fortunately, I wasn't subjected to some of the horrors that you hear about, but I certainly began to suspect them that they weren't all they were cracked or making themselves out to be. I was suspicious of that from a very young age, but I couldn't often put my finger on what exactly I was suspicious about. But now we know.
Thanks, John. Yeah, interesting. Joel?
Yeah, I mean, John's right, but even as socialists, even though we're not shocked that those activities went on, I think we're still shocked at the fact of the things he actually did. I think that's the all the distasteful stuff. I mean, that's the sort of stomach churning.
This is Savile, you mean, Joel?
Well, not just Savile, Cyril Smith, etc., etc. I mean, it's even though it's we know that, I suppose, people in authority know that it's going on. I mean, it's just the fact that I know when I've watched documentaries on it, and my stomach just churns. I just feel so uncomfortable. It's untrue, and so. Yeah, it's just a point, But yeah, what John said is right, though. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Joel. Yeah, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, it's just occurred to me as well in another sort of past life in another organisation that I was a member of up till a few years ago when I was a bit fitter and healthier. And you know, it's not always about them and us. You know, us being us and them being the authorities. That there's a lot of that infiltration stuff goes on with opposing groups. I used to be a member of the Glasgow and West of Scotland Hunt Saboteurs. You'd be surprised just how secretive we had to be when we were organising, you know, events, fox hunts and the likes. And every now and again, someone would pop up
And you have to be very, very guarded because they can be so plausible when and it's happened a couple of times, you know, we thought we had everything covered and then we turned up ready to, you know, do what we had to do and you know, sort of countryside alliance type organisations that would have maybe sent us, you know, a stool along to find out, you know, and he could be, he or she could be around for weeks and sometimes months at a time. And you'd believe everything is said, and then suddenly, you know, you turn up at an event, a fox hunt, and the cops were stood there waiting for you with their cars and things, you know, and the whole thing was ruined because obviously. And then, of course, that sort of stranger, someone who you'd gotten to learn to like and trust, you never see them again, a thing, you know. So there are instances like that as well, that it's not always down to the authorities, just opposing groups can have infiltrators and the likes. If you know you don't operate in the same kind of channels as they might do, but yeah, it's wide open. It's not always about spies and international espionage. You know, sometimes it can be something like that at a much more local level. But yeah, that's the things you're up against. I don't think we as a party have to worry too much, not until we become much bigger anyway. And hopefully those that do come along out of some more than interest and curiosity, we might be able to swing them over to our way of thinking anyway. Wouldn't that be a nice thing? Cheers.
Once we're bigger, it'll be too late to do anything about us.
Yeah.
Exactly, comrade.
Good point, yeah.
That's the spirit. Totally.
Thanks, Paul, yeah. Okay. It's past 9 o'clock now. Just past 9 o'clock, and we normally sort of close round about this time. So shall we decide to do that now then? And look forward to the next. Thanks very much to everyone for coming. Look forward to the next talk, which I understand is there's now going to be a break over the holiday period, and it's going to be. I think I'm right in saying this, Adam, January the 13th.
Yes, it'll be January the 13th, a New Year break.